This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for the very last segment of our draft countdown shows, the finish up, the conclusion of the Edge Rusher Talk with John Ledyard. John, great first show. Incredible depth of analysis from you. Thanks for joining me again.
Well, thanks, Ken. I appreciate the kind words and I appreciate you having me on. It really is a ton of fun to talk through this class. People probably heard firsthand, like, I am just that tier, that 6 to 10 is a tier for me. And I am having a heck of a time working through it and trying to figure out who I trust the most for the NFL. This next group we'll talk about is mostly a tier and one guy by himself. And we'll talk about that tier as well. But I feel more confident in my evaluation and value of these players over other players. It doesn't mean that I don't see a path where they could be worse than some of the guys below. But in terms of what matters at this position, I feel good about where I'm at with this group as opposed to the last one.
And, you know, nobody's going to put too much weight on whether you had somebody number 9 or number 11. But why don't we talk about who you had in your top 10 and maybe who you left out to who I've already named?
Yeah, so it's who I've got. So you mean who we did in the last show?
10, 9, 8, 7. Yeah, who did the last show?
Yeah, yeah. I got Landon Jackson, number 10, from Arkansas, Ohio State, edge defender JT Tuimoloau at number 9. I've got Texas A&M edge Shamar Stewart at number 8. 7, I have Ole Miss edge Princely Umanmielen. And number 6, I have Georgia edge Michael Williams. And I am unsettled, as I've previously said, Ken.
All right. My 10 through 7, which I've gone, I'm about to give number 6, is Tuimoloau, Jackson, Umanmielen, Braden Swinson, who was a higher guy for you at number 5, right? Mm-hmm. So he's actually in this next tier of players that we've talked a little bit about it. And then it's time for my number 6 guy, who is Nick Scorton of Texas A&M. So I'm going out of my notes on him. He is one of several players, very traitsy, but he's a pear-shaped 4-3 end, which is, it's an odd shape for an end. You get a lot of these vertically assembled athletes, almost look like robots sometimes. They're so extremely fit and of a specific sort. That's not the case with Scorton. He's a barrel-chested guy, very solid pressure rate, and unfathomable coverage stats, which we'll get to in a moment. There's had to be something scheme-wise that was different. I haven't figured out exactly what it is, but he's a guy also who has a big weight differential. Supposedly, he weighed in at the combine at 257, but he might have played at 285. And very, you know, when I see that, I usually think, oh, okay, well, he dropped a bunch of weight in order to run well at the combine because he wanted to show up well there or do the other testing well. It's an odd amount of weight to drop prior to the combine. Didn't have any other testing, though he did do Texas A&M Pro Day results. Texas A&M only reports their Pro Day results for a top 3 at every position, or in every drill, I should say. The third bench was 17 reps. the third best bench was 17 reps. He's not on the list of benches. So either didn't do it or he did worse than 17 reps. And I don't like either of those choices. but anyway, it's a kind of a bummer. Now here's the weird thing. And this is the point I mentioned too, is that I cannot figure out what's going on. He has 166 career coverage snaps. Now you guys know, I've heard already from the first episode, how much I want the Ravens to get Sam linebacker traits in this draft. It's critically important. The only guy they have to do it right now is Van Noy. Both Van Noy and Oway likely to be gone. So it's a big problem for the Ravens. Anyway, 131 of his coverage snaps came with Purdue in 2023. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that is, but I don't think it's real. So there's something about the way they're counting a coverage snap that just can't be right. I mean, because you look at Nick Scorton, he's a huge guy. I mean, he's just does not look like he should be dropping off ball to coverage a lot. So, and then you look at the other statistic that was with that. Of those 131 coverage snaps, he was targeted four times and allowed only one reception for 5 yards. If that were true, he'd literally be the greatest dropping from the outside linebacker that's ever played the game pretty much in college football. That's just ridiculously good. So something is wrong. I have to figure out if maybe he was used as a spy or something like that, which doesn't even seem possible given who he is. I mean, it's just, I got to figure out what actually happened with that. Moving on.
I actually watched him at Purdue. Yeah, he truly does drop. He drops to the edge. Now, he was a lot lighter when he played at Purdue. Mm-hmm. He was more the 260 range when he was at Purdue. So I think that's part of the hypothesis of him dropping was like they saw him more as a drop player. I didn't particularly watch him and think, oh, he's going to be great at this in the NFL. But I'll get to that part of the evaluation later. But he did actually truly drop.
Okay, so he truly dropped. Can you explain how he only got targeted four times?
I can't explain that. Yeah, I probably would go after I will say this: college teams generally are most of the time when you're dropping as an edge, you're dropping to the flat. Most of the time, the receiver in the flat is a running back. Asking that player to convert to a vertical, like sending the running back vertical and asking the edge defender carry him, is where a lot of teams get big plays in the NFL. In college ball, they just don't use running backs that well in the passing game. So I think a lot of these guys don't get attacked the same way they will in the league.
All right. All right. It's plausible what you said. It's just so extreme. I'm having trouble believing it. So I think it means I just need to go back and watch more 2023 Purdue to really figure out what's going on. His finish rate was 22.2%. That's very low in 2024. That means his quarterback hits plus his sacks divided by his total pressure events, down from exactly 50% higher the year before, 33.3% in 2023, which is pretty good. So, or it's okay anyway. A very unimpressive stops to missed tackle ratio of 3.0 to 1, 54 to 18 for the combination of 23 and 24. So, it doesn't matter whether he's playing off ball or on ball, a 3-to-1 relationship between those two is bad for an outside linebacker. Shamar Stewart is, I think, the only one who's worse among the draftable guys that I looked at the top 20 or so that I looked at. In terms of what he does as a pass rusher, because this is what we all care about, his spin move is a go-to whenever his initial move creates B-gap space. So he likes to rush against a naked tackle and try and push him a little bit upfield, then roll back to the inside. And he's got a serviceable spin move for that. He's a remorseless penetrator, as far as I've seen. He tries to get upfield regardless of the situation. Like to hear your thoughts on that. Takes a risk of running himself out of position a lot, but a lot of his high-end tackle for loss productivity, which is a lot of what he does against the run in particular, very good run defender in terms of tackles for loss. A lot of that comes from getting upfield. He had 29 tackles for loss in the last 2 years. Had a very high motor, and that's important to note. Despite being a guy who played 46 and a half snaps per game in 24, I think it's nice to see a guy who's still playing hard every play. He doesn't have bend that you'd normally associate with the typical athlete for the position, and he does, despite his size, get blocked 12 to 6 a lot. And that's something that obviously you'd like to see less. He's a fascinating athlete, already has a big time, spin move. I think he would benefit from more pass rush polish that I think Chuck Smith could give him. I think he would benefit from being a rotational player. I think that would be, something, that would be good. Don't know if he's athletic enough to carry 280 as an NFL player. So I think a lot of it is going to be at what weight he could play at. I think he is not a great fit probably for a 3-4 team. He's probably a better fit for a 4-3 team. And I just have to understand what the situation was with the coverage to really get my mind around it. Cause it's of all the things I saw, it's like the Chucky doll left in the engine or something. It just doesn't make any sense in all of these edge rusher stats.
Yeah, that 2023 season was an interesting one at Purdue. I wonder what all led to him transferring to Texas A&M. But he was number 13 for me. I had a hard time. Just what I mentioned in the last show, the four pillars of pass rush athleticism, right? Burst off the ball, speed up the arc, bend and flexibility at the top of the arc, change of direction or ability to stop, start, and kind of go around tackles, cross face, those kinds of things. I just didn't really feel like he was that type of player. I think he's really crafty. His hand usage is pretty good. He's got the really nice cross chop. You'll see him shorten the corner. He's not bendy, but he gets a little action as a high side rusher despite that, just because he knows how to trim it and shorten that corner a little bit. The good guys got him, though. I think a big part of his game is intensity and effort and physicality. And the when he faced the good guys, I thought they mostly handled that. The guys who could, like Armand Membo, just put him in a body bag the entire game. And I thought that was a really telling matchup. Like, I think he doesn't have the traits to dominate. So in college, even if you watch his run defense, his high-end plays are really good. He's really disruptive. But then snap to snap, he doesn't always get off blocks. A lot of his best plays are, when did he backdoor something and get somebody? When did he shoot a gap? When did he slip past a block? Like, there are good things, but it is – I don't think it's a down-to-down or snap-to-snap consistency with him as a run defender that I would like to see, especially when he was a heavier end. Now, he is a little bit – there's a little bit of an enigma because he lost the weight, right? And so maybe he was playing too heavy. Brugler wrote in the Beast, just kind of, he has always insight into these weight questions. So I'm always like, look, I wish everybody went to the combine and just asked everybody what their playing weight was, what they wanted to be, what their weight evolution was over the years. Like, I think it's a really important topic. He played at 285 pounds last year. So that's real, like from Brugler's conversations with probably him, honestly. But he plans to play at 265 pounds in the NFL. So he's going to be down closer to that Purdue weight. Everybody who watched him a ton at Purdue says that they like that tape more. I personally watched the tape and I thought he was exactly the same player, other than the fact that he got asked to drop into coverage. But I just felt like there was like not much difference in terms of how he moved, not much difference in terms of who he was as a passer. I didn't see a guy with way more juice or anything like that. I just think he's pretty average to below average in terms of traits. I love how hard he plays. I think he actually has the ability to be in rotation as a pure rush guy. I think he could be a guy that maybe moves around a little bit. I asked a little bit in my evaluation, because he become like a, I don't know that I still feel this way with knowing now that he's cutting the weight, but when he was 285, I wrote this eval and I was like, oh, he's just going to be 285. Could he be Zach Allen? Like, could he become Zach Allen, who was this edge rusher, heavy edge at Boston College? Didn't look like he had any of the traits you needed. The arms were like, it just was kind of this, again, barrel chested type of frame. You maybe want to move him inside. Some people early in the process with Skirton was like, sure, do we move him inside? And then you watch his tape and you're like, he's not really a true inside player. And Allen has actually become a true inside player, but he's really just a really good interior pass rusher. And he's developed enough of the other things to be able to stay on the field for three downs. Could Skorton be like the pass rush version, like the poor man's version of Zach Allen as an inside rusher? And now with the weight coming down, I'm like, you know, I don't even know if he's that. And the other big concern, I already had big questions about his athletic traits. Then he didn't test and he's not injured. He didn't test the combine. He didn't test his pro. He didn't do anything. I just think that's a big red. To me, that just, the results weren't going to be good. And I think traits, to me, traits really matter at this position. And because the results weren't going to be good, I don't think he did anything. And so I think he's just sort of like a mid-round type of player to me, where like he could maybe add something to the room with the effort, the physicality, and the pass rush savvy kind of that he has. And I think there's enough there that he could get by as like a depth edge and be a solid backup for a team. But you're right, probably a 4-3 front. And I think there's going to be some limitations to what a ceiling will be in the NFL.
Yeah, you don't want to have – nobody wants to be pegged as a 5-tech, which is a dying position in the NFL. So you'd much rather go to a 4-3 team if you have a body type like that who you think you might be left there. Great thoughts, though. Really appreciate that. So your number 5 guy was Swinson, right?
Swinson, yeah, who I talked about. I could talk more about him because I love him, but
I think we have to be good on that given the amount of time we have left. So we'll go to my number five guy. That's Jalen Walker of Georgia. And I didn't include him with any stand-up linebackers. You have him with this group as well?
I do. I have him, yep. Okay. Edge defender, for sure an edge defender. He's actually two for me.
Okay. Well, fantastic. So, you know, definitely a hell of an athlete. Georgia used him all over the line, which is one of the really freaky things that they could use him in coverage some, but they used him a little bit starting off ball, starting in various gaps and on the edge, almost always standing up. I didn't see him really lining up in a 3-point stance on the inside. Did you see some of that?
He lined up, stand up. It was sort of like he would stand up. I don't know if I would say him a through. He stood up off the ball on like long and late downs a lot of time. They'd have him sort of as like a stand up guy over the face of the guards. He'd mug up in the A gaps, things like that. That was really it, but nothing with a hand down inside.
Right. No. Yeah, that's what I recall as well. His background is an inside linebacker, actually special teams player 1 year, inside linebacker the next, and then all of a sudden he's Mr. Everything in his third year. So he's actually got very little total college experience, but he just turned 21 in February. So he's one of the really young guys in this draft. 265 career coverage snaps, though, is one of the areas where he's really long in terms of what he's done. I think he's a Sam candidate. He's allowed 6.4 yards per target, a little bit of high passer rating, but again, played 265 coverage snaps. If the Ravens liked some of his traits, they would be fine drafting that. You know, his value obviously is as a pass rusher, where he had 383 career attempts, and incredibly 73 pressures. That's an incredibly high rate, almost one in five. The missed tackle rate is a solid 10.8%. And a 5.3-1 stops to missed tackle ratio. So I don't need to spend too much time on this. Great backside pursuit player on runs, outstanding closing speed. You know, he had two fantastic games against Texas, one against Notre Dame in this last season, where if you just watched those three games, you'd probably swear he was the most dominant player in all of college football. And he wasn't too far away from that. But you'd swear that he was based on those games alone, and they're the biggest stages, obviously, that that Georgia had. You know, he's a Sam linebacker, I think, for the Ravens. I think there's a risk of over projecting a player like Walker, because I think that he doesn't. It has not been established exactly where he'll be most effective as a player. Everybody wants to compare him to Micah Parsons already. There's one Micah Parsons, folks. If you're going to say Jalen Walker is going to be Micah Parsons, then you're going to have one Micah Parsons every year. You know, and I don't want to be that guy, but Jalen Walker might be as good as Micah Parsons. And if it works out that way, fantastic. But in the range of outcomes, that would still be, I think, a 85th or 95th percentile result somewhere in there for a player like Walker to end up as good as Parsons is. I don't see him returning to off-ball linebacker. Love to hear your thoughts on that. I think a more specialized role like what Tyus Bowser had with the Ravens, where you'd see him standing up off-ball, picking his gap, is something that might be appropriate. I don't want to shortcut all the other things about him. I know you're going to go into a lot more than I have just now in terms of all the things you like about the way he gets to the edge or finds ways to beat players. But his versatility is almost an enemy to me, and that's probably why I have him a little lower than you do.
Early on in the process, I thought he was the most overrated player in the class. So I was really low early on, especially because I thought he was going to be an off-ball guy who moonlighted on the edge, and I just don't really think that's a real thing for the most part. I think people kind of make it up. They wish it was a thing, but it's not usually really a thing. Like, it's, if you do come off the edge, it's just part of a blitz package. You're probably not truly rushing 1v1 off the edge as an off-ball linebacker. That's not really how it works. Like, you were twist, you're going to do something along mm-hmm. with the package. But so I thought it was sort of a mythical player. And then so I published this report on him that was mainly as a linebacker. And I was just like, I think he's a day three developmental player as an off-ball linebacker. And I just don't really see, like, even I don't think he's like that player in space. Like, I think he's fine for an edge defender, he'd be great in space, but for an off-ball linebacker, when you ask him to, especially because you have to retreat at that position. So when you're talking about off-ball linebacker, you're dropping in coverage and you're playing in space, you're moving laterally and you're feeling around you. They use him as a spy almost every play off ball. So it's just like, I don't, like, he doesn't really even drop into coverage. Like, I don't understand why people saw him as a linebacker. So I just felt like the linebacker stuff to me was just totally overrated. He was not a read it, see it, feel it, any type of player as an off-ball linebacker. And then some Dane, actually, I've talked to Dane because Dane's had him like so high. I asked Dane, I was like, what am I missing here? He's like, just watch his D-line snaps. Watch every snap he's on the edge. Watch when he's on the D-line. And don't watch it like by game, basically. Like, so just watch those snaps. So thankfully at the time I had an opportunity to just see all of those snaps together with 200 some of them. And that's when I started to see the vision for the player, because everybody's going to talk about how he doesn't have great length for an edge defender. That's true. Watch how many times it affects him on tape, because he's first hands on every rep. He's hands to the chest. People like to talk about length, and it does matter, but it only matters typically because it helps accentuate or helps make up for other deficiencies, or it's the player's greatest strength, and so it helps them survive despite other deficiencies. Like, it's that kind of a trait, I think. Whereas with Walker, if you're hands on first on every rep and your hands are in the chest first every rep, your length matters a lot less, because the other guy isn't going to be able to reach as far when he's getting knocked backward. So I think he's into people's chest all the time first, and so it offsets the length. Now, is there ever a rep where it matters? Sure. I think there could definitely be a rep where it matters. He understands one arm is longer than two, so the long arm principles apply for him, and I think he uses that pretty effectively. He's just an extremely violent football player. He's very explosive in his first step, I think. How that will work coming off the edge is still a work in progress. He's not used to just teeing off all the time. So you see it in flashes where you're like, that's the player. Like, there it is. High side rush potential. I think he has speed to power potential. I think he can cross face on people. And you start to see the potential, but it is because he plays off the ball so much. He's not used to just teeing off and going on every snap. So he's not programmed like that right now. I think all the traits are there, though. And that's the big argument with him. Are the traits actually there to be that good? I think they are. People who aren't as high on him think that they aren't. So I think if he gets a chance to develop at this position, we're going to see a really, really good football player. He's not in my tier one players by himself, but he is still a really good prospect. I know that there's risk here. I am 100% admit that. I'm just willing to take the risk for the type of player that this is at this position. I think with the traits, I love the play demeanor. I love the athletic traits. I think he showed enough in flashes. And then the other really compelling part of him is when he did line up inside in the two-point stance, it isn't that he's necessarily going to be in that role all the time in the NFL, but the fact that he can jab and cross face as fast as he does. I mean, guards hit air trying to block him when he's in that alignment. I think it's just not that he's going to even do that all the time in the NFL, but just to know the trait is there. When he wants to set somebody up square as a rusher and he can jab and cross face, I think that's going to put tackles in a situation where they don't know what path to the quarterback he's going to take. So he is not the freak Parsons is. He could be used similarly, not going to be the same results. Like I said, I don't think he's a tier one guy in the league or anything like that, but I think this can be a really, really good football player. And I felt like at the end of the day, after watching everybody, I just like, yeah, I think I'll bet on his traits after, you know, the number one guy more than anybody else in the class.
All right. Outstanding. So very, very positive on Walker. I'm glad to hear it. And that's a more detailed discussion of him than I've heard from anybody else. So we're up to your number four guy. Who's that?
Yeah, Mike Green's number four for me. Really like this player. The off-the-field stuff is a separate conversation we probably won't get into on this show, but there's some of those concerns there with him. But I think in terms of the traits, if he consistently gets off the ball the way his best reps do, I think he'll be a pretty similar player to Brian Burns. That's a funny comp for some people because Brian Burns has kind of this long, like lanky body type, and Green is a little more compact. He doesn't have great length. And so I understand that part of them, not necessarily physically comparing them. I just think the types of players that they are, where when they get off the ball, their ability to go inside outside as rushers is awesome. They've got absolutely nothing as power rushers. It's not on the table for them. And I think it limits the bag a little bit, but just unbelievable. Like the bend flexibility for Green at the top of the arc, A+. I think when he gets off the ball, great. You can really see it. Sometimes he doesn't get off the ball great, and it limits what his best trait is, I think, which is ability to high side rush as a bend flex guy. So that's my one question, is just like what part's going to look like for him in terms of getting off the ball consistently. A lot of his tape is, you know, I wanted to see him dominate people a little bit more, I think, than I did on tape, especially given the level of competition. He was really at his best in the Ohio State game, though. He hit an outside spin in the Ohio State game that it's one of the best pass rushes I've ever seen, just a one-off, you know, type of pass rush. I mean, to be able to plant, jab inside and spin outside, hardly anybody wins with an outside spin, even in college. In the NFL, it's like unheard of.
Right.
It's Dwight Freeney stuff. You know what I mean? And so just the fact that he could win that way, just to, the balance to come to an outside spin and gain ground coming up the arc, and then to come to balance to be able to finish in space as a pass rusher. I think he's got really unbelievable athletic traits. I just wish that he doesn't have, he's not that big. He's not that powerful. He plays really hard and physical. That's not a question at all. I don't know how dominant of a run defender he's going to be. I think he can get engulfed a little bit at times. So I think there's going to be some like low end stuff to him. He's, and this is where I get to the Brian Burns thing. One off pass rushes, Brian Burns is unbelievable. If you just put his best 10 passers, you'd be like, this guy's a freak. Like, he can't stop him at all. And then you watch the larger sample size, and it's like, oh, okay. Like, he does get beat up a little bit at times. There's some rushes that don't go as well. It's sort of like he's throwing everything at the wall, and then he'll get the couple that hit during the game, and everything else is worth it because those plays are so special. That might be sort of the tier Green is in, whereas for guys that are the tier one types, every snap's a problem. Like Michael Parsons and Myles Garrett and TJ Watts, these guys are – every snap's a problem with these guys. That's not necessarily – I don't know if Green is that quite special of a player where he's going to have you in hell every snap, but I think he's going to do it three or four times a game, and you're going to look at those plays at the end. Man, he lulled me to sleep. I didn't think he was built like this, and now he is. So that's sort of the player type of player I see him as being, that kind of a tier as a rusher. But wouldn't surprise me at all if he ends up being the second best guy in this class too. I think he's really belongs firmly in this tier for sure.
I'm with you all the way. He's my number two guy. And I don't think you can go through this, particularly from a Ravens perspective, without having a brief discussion about it. But he has some off-field sexual assault allegations. Yeah. One earlier, another one that occurred in college. He has a weird gap year in his history that's related to that happening at Virginia. The Virginia coaches apparently speak very highly of him. And I think the Ravens' current situation with Justin Tucker is one where they would be less likely to take a chance on Mike Green. And that is a sad, sad fact of life, because Mike Green's one hell of a football player from what I can see. Athletic traits are off the charts. A 685 shuttle, a 425 three cone at this position, 28 bench reps. I mean, I look at his tape too, and I basically came to the same conclusion that you did, that he's much more flexible than he is strong. He looks like Gumby. Yep. on some reps. But the fact of the matter is he doesn't probably make use of his strength as much as he could on the field. Maybe that's something that's still to grow. But more than any other pass rusher in this class, he has the explosive first step. So I'll go back to your first pillar of the four, and I would say the four pillars are not of equal height. That first step, if you've got that, you've got a whole lot of things you need in terms of everything. Yep. As being a pass rusher. There are guys in this class, and we have not gotten to one yet, who could just win outside, and they almost have not had to learn anything else at the college level. Green is not quite that, but he's better in a sense that he goes outside and he has a counter for it to go back inside, and is very effective forcing over sets from the offensive tackle he's opposite. So that offensive tackle is jumping to the outside, trying to slide outside extra fast, and oops, now he's gone to the inside, and that's a problem. Green has the power, the leverage to go to the bull rush at times. I think his athleticism tells me he might be a Sam linebacker, which of course I'm looking for in all these guys, but he has just 23 coverage snaps in the last two seasons. Now he's played in a situation where they wanted his pass rushing. So I don't really blame him for that. I think at the NFL level, yeah, he might well be asked to do more coverage. You in the same spot?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think it's – I think a lot of it's just like, this is how teams just choose to play him. This is how his defense chooses to use him, more so that he can't do it when he has to. I think he could definitely do it.
He's a Sun Belt Player of the Year. He led the entire NCAA in sacks, I believe. I might be wrong about that, but tell me if I am. And the only thing from his statistical component that's really not up to snuff, he's a 14.3% career missed tackle rate. That's a little high, but he makes up over it with unbelievable productivity. So even though he's got a slightly high missed tackle rate, he had a 49-9 stops to missed tackle rate. I forget if that's the last 2 years combined or if that's just 2000 and, or maybe his career, but a 5.4-1 stops to missed tackle rate over whatever period I looked at it is utterly fantastic, even with a high missed tackle rate. In fact, give me a few more missed tackles if you can maintain that kind of a stop sit missed tackle rate. It would be the way I'd look at that. He did have a lot of cleanup in what he did in terms of his finishes. That's okay because he has a ton of finishes. Quarterbacks holding the ball too long in the Sun Belt. I think he made up for some of his length by being a very good arm tackler. So many times he seems to get the guy by the ankle and he's down. I mean, just I more than I see in almost any other edge defender. Very good at one and two gap stunts. Has all the as an over. I'd use him as an over always because you really want to make use of his quickness. But if you have a guy, anybody who can set that pick properly with a decent first step, you get that guy an advantage and you get him an advantage on either a one or two gap stunt. Lined off ball in some pass rush situations, that, you know, gives me that little glimmer of hope that he might be a Sam linebacker at something. I think he'll be gone in the first 20 selections. I don't think it's a case of the Ravens having a chance to get him. There'll be a team that will not care at all about the allegations, which is good for him because you never know if those are true or not, but he certainly deserves the benefit of the doubt. The first one, apparently something happened in high school. It was real. He went through some program and you know, I look at it as the guy's done his time. And in terms of the second one, I don't think the allegations have ever been,
for the one at Virginia in his second year, he was suspended at the start of that second year following the sexual assault allegation. He was not charged. The case was suspended. He's denied any wrongdoing in the second one. The one in high school, no formal charges were filed. He signed a zero tolerance policy at Virginia and then had another thing come up. So, yeah. I mean, my struggle is two different eras of your life after you signed a zero tolerance policy, like, you know, and you never know the details of these things, but it wasn't like Mike Green was like, you know, people look at these, and again, we're always guessing, but it's not like this is like, he's like the most high profile player in the country or anything. And somebody's like trying to do a money grab and then, you know, something like that. That wasn't he was a nobody, you know, in terms of that type of stuff. Like he wasn't on anybody's radar really. I mean, I'm sure he was in scouts like his first year at Marshall, but he had barely played at that point. So what, you know, so that gives me a lot of concern, just two different eras of his life where that's happened. Like, I would just really want to know. Now, like you said, the coaches do rave about him at his last two spots, but I would really want to know the character of the person I'm aligning myself with. The teams probably won't care about that. It's far enough away that they're just going to draft him for the player that he is, and he's a really good football player.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the Ravens just can't be that cavalier about it. And I don't mean that other teams, you know, other teams are completely right for drafting a great football player, but the Ravens just can't afford to have two on the docket at once. I seeing what's happened after the Ray Rice situation and how careful they were about domestic violence situations. And then the Tucker situation coming up is just it's a say it ain't so moment here. I know you don't really live in the Baltimore area and you probably are close enough to understand exactly what the allegations are, but I mean, it's unbelievably sad here for this to be happening. It's probably going to ruin Justin Tucker's Hall of Fame chances. And it's a bad, bad situation. So anyway, Mike Green is my number two guy. Without that, unfortunately, I don't think the Ravens make that pick.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But I think that the player himself, like I said, I actually think he could even be better in the NFL than he is in college. And I think he still has some putting it all together. But the fact, this is the high-end stuff he can do. And this is where it gets top four that I have. We'll get to my last, you know, two guys here. But especially two through three and four, you could really have in any order, and I would feel like really good about it. You know, I have Swinson kind of below those guys just because of some of the other, like, didn't happen until this year. Like, there was kind of like, why didn't it? You know, he's a little bit older. Like, there's some of those profile questions. I think the tape is as good, but there's some of those profile questions where these guys kind of that are in this group here, it's like, man, you could go any order here, and you could convince me that all of them are going to be maybe a little bit better in the NFL than they have been even in college.
Tell a little story here because I used to go to a Ravens Suiteholder event, not because I own a suite, but because Transamerica, the company I worked for at the time, had suites, so they would allow some of their executives to go to a special once per year event, and it was freaking great. They would bring in Ozzie and the coach, Harbaugh at the time. It was never Bill. It was always Harbaugh when I was there. And they would always bring a high-profile player. You know, it's normally a rookie who goes to these kind of things, but we got Joe Flacco after his rookie year, and we got Ray Rice after the next year. I mean, we got Peter Boulware come and talk to us. I mean, it's very cool stuff. But the most cool thing is the tour of the facility. and you got to go into the draft room after the draft. The plaques were still up on the board, not how they had the guys rated originally, because they had moved the plaques from that board to the here's the team they're with board. But the dot system for each of these plaques was a thing of beauty. They had, you know, about 10 or 12 different designations they had for people. And one of them was a black dot. And that meant that for either injury or character concerns, the Ravens were not interested in drafting that player. I'm afraid Mike Green probably has a black dot this year if they're still using that same method. But there are about 15 or 20 people each draft that they have to put in that class. Most of them are for injury. And it was interesting because in 2010, which is one of the times I went, Arthur Smith was actually drafted despite having a black dot, but he dropped all the way into the fifth. Arthur Smith dropped all the way into round five, and the Ravens picked him anyway and ended up being a good player for them. So that was ended up being a good pick. But it's the Ravens are very particular, and they do have to discuss how character impacts the organization. I wouldn't be surprised if they need to run character decisions all the way up to Bisciotti for them to basically buy into the notion, okay, we can draft this guy or we cannot. But I think it's part of Eric DaCosta's job to go to Steve with a set of, hey, we want to exclude these guys for injury, and we have these four guys for character concerns as well that I think we want your ruling on, but they're good football players, but I don't think we can draft.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a consideration for the Bucs too. I know that I cover, you know, I think, again, I'd be surprised if they were the team that took him too. And so we'll see where he does go. But I think that there's going to be some teams that don't care about as much, and there's going to be teams that care about a lot. And, you know, the Marshall thing, maybe that adds to it for teams, like just the fact that we haven't necessarily seen the high profile, like against the top two, but just how he played against Ohio State. I know Virginia Tech's terrible, but how he played against Virginia Tech, like, I think there's just a lot of like, we're not as worried about that. So I think it really is, you know, checking those boxes and making sure the stuff in the meetings is good. But I would guess that if all that stuff checks out for teams, I would guess he's the second edge defender off the board in this draft. Maybe the third if you see Jalen Walker will be off the board high too, I think.
All right. So we're up to, let's see, did we hit on your number four guy yet?
I think we're on number three for me. Number four for me was Green. So I had Swinson five.
My number four guy then is still left. I'll go quickly. He's obviously on your list too, is James Pierce of Tennessee. And one really fabulous thing. I promise not to take it all here, but I've got to talk about a few of these things. He is the guy who is a pure winner with speed. His pass rush production is the absolute top of the class at 13.4 in terms of pass rush production. He has a terrible finish rate of 21.8% in the 12th percentile. And I don't honestly even care about it that much, but there's so much similarity in terms of how he wins snap after snap. He tries to win outside. He's got an amazing get off, a good rip move. He's got other moves he can use to the outside.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, it takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, their Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
So it's a lot of rip. He's a guy who needs a counter more than anybody else in this draft to try and win back inside. And I think he could easily be the most devastating guy in the class in terms of pass rush with that. He's very, very polished in terms of moves that fit his first step, whether he's ripping, chopping, lots to like there. Very disruptive player when his ears are pinned back. There won't be any problem there right out of the gate. What else is there to say about it? I want to leave some of this for you. Very powerful ankle tackle grip as well. He's another guy, seems to take the quarterback down by his ankles a lot. So that is actually antithetical to the 21.8%. I think that's the right word. Overall finish rate is kind of low, but he's got so many pressures from beating his guy and getting in that he probably still, his tackles are a relatively small percentage of that. He would enter the league as a pass rush specialist for the Ravens. He's one of several very reasonable choices at number 27 that I'll hope will fall. And I think he'd benefit more from Chuck Smith, just about anybody.
James Pierce is number 11 for me, Ken.
Oh God, no way. Oh, what the hell for?
Yeah, I just thought of the player. He is extremely explosive. Everything you said is true. The athletic testing is awesome. I had to get the pass rush. The production numbers are great too. Like when you look at all the advanced stats, really good for him, right? Like he's a high end finisher in all of those sorts of stats. I've seen all the data. I just watched the tape, and I think he is really explosive off the ball. And that stat, that alone, just because I think he is that good of an athlete off the ball, is why I have him 11. But I think pretty much everything else is not what I want at this position. I just didn't think he got off blocks. I didn't think he played hard consistently. I thought that the speed to power was just, he tries to do it all the time. He loves to do it. I just don't think it's there. I don't think he's got a lot of bender flexibility at the top. I think he's kind of a long-legged frame. He's got like this really high-cut type of frame, and I think he really just struggles to drop the pads and turn through contact at the top of the arc. There, it just isn't a lot of impact on contact. A lot of his pressures and a lot of his productions I watched came, he beats guys out of their stance. The Alabama right tackle found out the hard way. But it's just not how guys win in the NFL. You don't typically just see guys just laid out of the stance and that's how they get beat in the league. Explosiveness helps you a ton for sure. It is such an important trait, but without the other stuff, I think it does become a little bit harder to win that way as a rusher. So I just think a lot of the way his production came was in unblocked or broken plays. As I was kind of charting, going through I ended up watching almost every game of him because I knew I was going to be off the beaten path with my take on him. And I just thought, as I charted a lot of the stuff and looked at it, I thought a lot of it was unblocked, broken plays, plays where the quarterback gets way too deep in the pocket. And so he's able to win high side, but not where NFL quarterbacks will be a little more conscious of that. College quarterbacks are trying to drop out and scramble, and he's unbelievable in space. If you just asked him to play in space, I think he's awesome. If you just ask a best guy in draft, I'd say if you're going to drop him into coverage, I think he has unbelievable traits for that. But just when I watched how his pass rush production happened, I just didn't see enough of the stuff. How do NFL players win as pass rushers from this position? I just didn't think he won enough in those ways to convince me. And then I actually think his potential as a run defender would be really good. He just doesn't always bring the same level of physicality. And in unblocked situations, he would just hang out sometimes instead of stepping down and taking on pullers. Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't. Just kind of do I want to be there? And then you ask around about him, obviously, and there's a lot of concerns there. We can maybe get into too about just what kind of person is he? What kind of worker is he? He wasn't even coming to practices during the week. He was just doing his own thing. So there's all those red flags. But honestly, my evaluation is separate from those things. I do have concerns in that way, but I don't actually factor that into my evaluation. It's just purely the on the field stuff. It's just because he is that explosive a player that if he did wise up and he did take the coaching, I think he could really become a better player. But I think this player type scares me sometimes, that I think they're more on paper than they are in the actual game, when you put on the tape, it's just like, like I didn't necessarily feel that he was the type of impact player that some of the numbers suggest that he is.
Wow. Okay. So I didn't realize there was an extra player missing from our list because we've gone one higher on yours in terms of what we've done. So,
I'm a hater.
No, you're okay. You're supposed to have your own opinion. Sam, linebacker traits, do you see that as a possibility? And obviously that involves learning, and there's some bashing there that's going on that may or may not, you know, be a problem continuously in the NFL. I will say the Ravens have been through that crap with Tim Williams. So it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't like Pierce or even had him black dotted if they really had a crappy interview with him. With these concerns being, you know, public knowledge, I'm sure they interviewed him and they probably, you know, they might have him already off their board for that if they did, or reduced on their board at least.
Yeah, I think there's traits there, but I think Sam is a mentality. Like you said, you have to be able to do a bunch of different things, right? Can you drop? Can you stand? Can you be up, rolled up on the edge? Could you drop off at times? Like, I think there's just a lot of different things you have to be able to do. He'd have to buy into the role. I just don't think he's going to buy into that role, like, to be honest. Like, I think physically, athletically, yeah, that's fine. He's totally fine in that regard. He doesn't get, like, bullied around a lot. He just will sit on blocks too much, and there's a lack of urgency from him overall as a player that concerns me a little bit. That could be better in the NFL or could not be. You know, I mean, he at the combine was he had to restart his 40, I think, four times before they got it right, in terms of just like, hey, no, you actually have to go. You have to raise your hand. You have to wait a second, and then you have to go. Mm-hmm. And like, it just, and you know, you don't read into all this stuff too much, but then he, you know, forgets his combine shirt in the hotel room, and he has to wear like some hoodie from another guy. Like, you know, it's those kind of things where it's just like, okay, like, what's it going to be like when you get him in the interview room? But again, those things aren't as big a part of my process. Like, we're obviously, you know, pulling from small sample sizes there and things like that. But I think more than anything, it's just, does he buy into that type of role if he's going to do it? I think that'd be the big question mark. Does he buy into every down, you know, as an NFL player? I think that's a big question mark. Is he team first, or is he himself first? You know, I think there's all those sorts of questions. To me, that's more of the question when you ask about a role like that than it is. Like, I know he wants to rush the passer on third down. I just don't know about the rest of the stuff.
All right. Outstanding. So looking at the rest of our list, we had different number two guys in Green and Walker. So I think we have the same number three guy because you've got a island guy at the top and I do too. So go ahead and start us off on the number three guy.
Yeah. Boston College, Donovan Ezeraku. Man, I really like this player a ton. Every snap is hair on fire. He goes hard all the time. If he was elite off the ball, I think he would be two for me. I just think he was a little bit not quite fast enough off the ball all the time. But the bend and flexibility and the ability to win in multiple ways as a pass rusher at the top of the arc, I think the main plane that a pass rusher needs to win at in the NFL is high side. You have to at least be able to be a high side threat as a pass rusher, I think, to be a high-end guy. There's some exceptions to that rule, but most of the top guys, you know, Jadeveon Clowney was viewed as a generational prospect, all this stuff coming out. He ended up being a really good football player. He probably had the best burst to speed to power type of body demeanor ability, like, of anybody that really anybody like at that position. But he was never a really great pass rusher 1v1 in a lot of ways. He actually got better later in his career as he got better with his hands because he was not a really bendy or flexible player high side on the rush. He was super fast off the ball, but he just never could really corner at the top of the arc. He never really won on that plane. And so guys just started sitting on his power moves and they knew what to expect. So his power was actually less impactful than it could have been. He should have been, if he could threaten more high side, he should have been the most devastating power rusher of all time because his burst was so good and his frame was obviously, he was just completely jacked. So I think that I use that as an example to say that I think you have, like, the top guys always can win high side in some way. And there's more than one way to win high side for Ezeraku. He can run under a table at full speed. He can lean on guys and get through the arc. He's got great hands at the top of the arc. He's got the speed to counter game that I really enjoy. I don't think, you know, he won't live on that bull rush, but there is speed to power in his game. He drops the pads. He will go into the opponent's chest. You have to be ready for it. You have to respect it. His ghost move, really nasty at the top of the arc. So I think he might be the best cornering rusher in the class in terms of tact and skill, at least in getting there. I don't think he's as good of an athlete as the guy we have at number one. And so I think that that part of it may limit the overall potential. But yeah, he came and he tested, right? He did the test. What is the test? I really care about a lot about three cone for an edge rusher, because I think at the end of the day, three cone denotes a lot of that movement that you actually, what applies to the position, what is functional athleticism. We say it as a scouting term. We very rarely well define it, but I think that flexibility for your position, that positional athleticism or functional athleticism for your position, a lot of that is denoted for this edge rusher for the position. A lot of that is found in the three cone drill. Can you do that well? He went out there, he did it. I forget his percentage that he finished with, but it was a really good result for him in the three cone. And so those things really stood out to me when I watched him. It's like, I think this is a guy whose game translates well to the NFL. And it's funny, he came in, he was not, in a lot of people's even top tens, and throughout the process, he's moved up, up, up. And now it's like, oh, teams, yeah, really like him, and they're going to take him, in the first round for sure. I don't, who knows where he goes in there. But that, plus you get all the character check boxes checked too for teams. I think they'll be big into that. Really interesting last thing about him, he's got 34-inch arms. But he's only like 6'2", 248. Mm-hmm. So he's not that big of a player, but he's got this unbelievable length, keeps guys off his frame. If they could get into his frame, I think he'd get pushed around maybe a little more in the run game. He actually ends up being pretty good in the run game, I think. So, somewhere in the Shaq Barrett to Jonathan Grenard type of player to me, maybe, where like I think the pass rush stuff's going to be awesome, and then they're just going to be way better in the run game. They're not going to mash people in the run game, but you don't really have to. You just have to be aware. You work hard. The one thing I'd say with Ezraku, he's not fast. I don't think he would run a great 40. He might have actually even run a 40 as pro day. I forget. He's not fast. And so if you ask him to play in space, which I think you're going to talk about a little bit, I don't know that that's going to be as great a role for him. He is a move forward and sideways player way more than he is a guy who's going to play out in space a ton and be a guy that backs up and comes for things like that. I don't think he's that type of a mover. So you may have some limitations for him in a scheme like Baltimore's for that reason.
That's a very good point. 462 measured by John Other, obviously has me wondering about that measurement. That was at obviously something other even than his pro day. 22 bench reps is kind of a little below par. And then I looked at his 34-inch arms and I'm like, okay, the longer the arms, the more leeway I give him on bench anyway. He developed into a top shelf finisher in 24, had 34 plays, 34. That's a combination of sacks and quarterback hits. And that was 57% of his total PFF pressures. That's just outrageously good. 57%. I don't have a rank in the class, but it would have been very high. He had an outstanding year as a tackler, 42 stops and 5 missed tackles. So 8.4-1 is one of the best in this group, might be the best. But anyway, it's outstanding. Did a great year, great job from the very first week of the year. He played Florida State, took on Darius Washington, who's a sixth-year senior, probably had some hopes of playing in the NFL, and maybe still will. But he humbled him in that matchup, play after play. What I think I saw most is that his hand placement is very good. So you see a lot of flailing from the tackle. And he gets his 34-inch arms. He's using them appropriately if he can get on the chest. And that's not something that everybody can do. We've already had one other show up as a windshield wiper guy that doesn't really work it. I think he doesn't really have the A counter yet. His spin move is just okay in terms of what he does to go back to the inside. But a lot of the hand placement helps him corner a little bit there. Saved his best for last in terms of a big final game versus Pittsburgh. Wasn't playing anybody good. Did a couple bad tackles, but he had a huge game in that game. It's the kind of game where you probably had about 16 plays that game. If people are used to my defensive articles that I put out a week and I do star treatment where I talk about every good play of the game, this would have been one of the longest ones I'd ever done in terms of the number of plays that he had that were good in the game. The two tackles he were beating are two big names, though, Ryan Bear and Isaiah Montgomery. So not Kelvin Banks and somebody else.
Oh, Gamble.
Yeah, there you go. he has the speed you want for the Sam position. At least I think he does. You mentioned he's not fast. I that's something I really like to understand better is does that 462-40 kind of real? He had 36 coverage snaps in 24. That might make sense. There is a different set of challenges when you go to the strong side. because it often means you have to beat two guys. We don't talk about this too much with edge rushers because we often act like they're just trying to beat a tackle. But when you're on that side, and Roger Rosengarten had a ton of help this last year, it means oftentimes you got a chip block you got to deal with, and players got to be good at dealing with that. They got to know how to react, how to kind of protect themselves in a little bit of a way. But also they have to understand sometimes that they have to beat one block, then beat another, which is often the case with the way that Ravens set it up with Rosengarten. They're giving him time to kind of get set a little bit further back while Andrews or likely or Charlie Kohler probably more frequently is up there at the line of scrimmage trying to block him. So that's something he'll have to deal with at the NFL level. That'll be, you know, probably a little bit of a change. He is small for the position, but he's averaged 63.8 snaps per game in the NFL, particularly for the Ravens. He play a lot less, so that's nice. I think he probably starts as a situational pass rusher. Not sure if you bring him in right away and have the run defense be a big part of his game, but he's clearly, I mean, he's our number three guy on both lists. He's clearly going to be a guy who plays a fair amount of snaps, and as a first round pick, they're going to want more from. So I love him for the Ravens. Would love him at 27, and I think he'd be the perfect guy to replace Owe were he to leave.
Yeah, he's a really good fit there, I think. I mean, you worry maybe a little bit about the drop stuff, but just in terms of, I think, just the pass rush potential that he gives you. And it seems like he could be available in that range. There's certainly some teams that like him, you know, ahead of him, I know, ahead of where Baltimore picks. But I still think he could be – that's a realistic target for them too. So, yeah, definitely a guy that, as a Pittsburgh guy, I wouldn't like to see him in Baltimore. But I think that that could definitely be a potential landing spot for him. But, yeah, I just think that the traits are there to rush the passer. You know, that's the big difference. What reason why I talk about the pillars is that people get so caught up in overall athleticism, like the 40s and all that kind of stuff. And like, I'm not saying it doesn't matter. It's always good to be more athletic, but how athletic are you in relationship to what your position asks you to do? Mm-hmm. That's not as easily defined at every position as it is at edge rusher, where you're literally on this plane, all right, all the time. You're in this 8-yard plane, 10-yard plane all the time, and you're working in that direction. So the traits can easily be measured as it applies to that type of movement. It's not always as easy for other positions, but I think for this position, he has those traits.
I mean, I'd say even at edge, the thing that's not testable, or at least I'm not aware of any test, is get off. And it's the most important, you know, characteristic we're looking for on the edge guys in a lot of cases. And it's nowhere in that. And Adafi Owe was a guy that it really didn't work out for in terms of he had all the other athletic traits, but didn't have that in terms of an outstanding get off. But you're absolutely right. I mean, every position is very different. And safety, for example, is a position where I think instincts are probably 10 times as important as speed. And, you know, if you have great instincts, it's how do you measure that? How do you get your handle on that?
Yeah, no, I think it matters a lot. I mean, especially those middle of the field positions. Yeah, I think all that stuff, you know, especially the further back you get from the ball, linebacker, safety, I think you have a lot of those things. I mean, I think the 10 yard split and the jumps should at least denote lower body explosiveness. Now, mm-hmm. with Owe, I think he is explosive. The problem is I think he still doesn't have a great understanding of, like, when to get off the ball. Like, he's not been, like, it's a reaction thing. I think with some guys, it's like, oh, they're explosive, but like they're testing, all this stuff indicates they can actually move quickly. But when it comes time to reacting to what you see, like, you don't react in time. And so you're late a lot of the time. When you move, it's quick, but everybody else's, the tackle's already set up shop at that point. And so you see that with some guys in the league too, or, you know, that you're projecting to come to the NFL from college ball too. And so I think with Ezeraku, it's just like his traits are not, he's not going to be somebody, if you got everybody together in the class and you said, hey, perform all these crazy athletic feats, that he would be not a high finisher in that. But if you asked a guy to run 7-8 yards and turn the corner and get to the quarterback, I think he's going to do that just about as well as anybody.
All right. Outstanding. Well, like, we named our number two guys from each list, Green and Walker. So we're down to the number one guy. Start us off.
Yeah. Abdul Carter. I mean, it's not a player without fail. I think he's absolutely perfect. This isn't Miles Garrett maybe in terms of who he is as a prospect, but just unbelievable. Like, tier one in terms of the athletic ability, and I don't mean tier one in this class. I mean, tier one period, just at this position. He's going to be as athletic as anybody, I think. Now, he's a little bit smaller than other guys, and I think the balance is probably his biggest question. There's going to be a decent amount of reps where he's probably on the ground, not because he gets bodied by people, but because he just plays so fast sometimes that he loses his balance. And so that is an athletic trait, and I think that does matter. It's interesting. I watched him against Donovan Jackson the other day just for kicks. I was watching Jackson, and Donovan Jackson's obviously not supposed to be a tackle he kicked out there when they lost Josh Simmons to injury. And it was poor Donovan Jackson's first game at left tackle. And it's just a bloodbath. Like every rep he beats him. Somebody loses his balance as he's trying to finish and get to the quarterback. He'll lose his balance and he falls over. And then he has like seven reps in it. He falls over probably like five times and he has seven reps that like nobody else in this class could do. And I'm just like, okay, like, I'm just going to be okay with the fact that he's on the ground some, like, because I just don't think anybody else. I mean, just the pure bend and flexibility at the top of the arc is just jaw dropping. Now he's still figuring out counters. He's still figuring out speed to power. Like, I don't know if that's all in his bag just yet. He isn't the biggest guy in terms of wingspan and stuff like that, I think. But the explosiveness, the bend of flexibility, the totally relentless motor, and the fact that his hands are already getting better, the ghost move, the cross chop he showed toward the end of the season, first year as an edge rusher. Just not a complex evaluation to me. I don't think it's all going to be perfect. He's not as polished as some of the other, like, tier one, number one guys in the past classes have been coming out. But the athletic ceiling is just jaw on the floor type of stuff. That's what he's capable of. So I can live with some of the downside parts of who he is as a player. Oh, by the way, he's not maybe going to like body people all the time in the run game, but he slips gaps all the time, makes tons of plays in the run game. No plays off ever with this guy. Hits people like crazy. I mean, he hammers people in unblocked situations. When you have him as the end man of the line of scrimmage, they leave him unblocked intentionally. They downblock, they bring guy across to kick him out. He is going to make that guy's teeth rattle. That's how he comes down the line of scrimmage and hits people. Now, he's had shoulder injuries, and so I don't know how great I feel about it, but he is just every single snap, he wants to put everybody in the dirt. He doesn't care about anything except for being the most physical guy on the field all the time. So I love the play demeanor too, because he isn't that big or that long. And I think because of that, you get this like player who's going to have to win first contact all the time. And he's built that way, similar to Walker in that way. He's just built that way in terms of, I'm going to win first contact all the time. I'm going to be the physical dominant one. And I think that really matters for a player that's going to be probably a little smaller.
Yeah. I definitely, first of all, agree on that. And I think fortune favors the aggressor as a pass rusher more than not. If you go ahead and take your chances and try and get first contact when you can. When you do, it's going to be very effective. And defense needs variance. Defense wins by variance. Offense cannot afford to allow variance. But the defense wins by it if they get penalties, if they get sacks, if they get turnovers. But they can't allow average yards per play on an every down basis, which is what the offense would just love to do to make the defense's life miserable. I had three questions about Carter, and otherwise I have very all positive comments pretty much. There's no length published for Abdul Carter that I can see. So there's none in the, I wonder if it's in Brugler's guide, because he often has stuff that nobody else has.
See if I can find it.
Appreciate if you would look that up. The second was, he had a medical for a stress fracture in his foot, and he was just recently cleared for training. When I say recently, in the last 2 or 3 months, this would have happened. And he was rehabbing from a shoulder injury, which kept him out of some workouts. So that may have been the reason why he didn't get measured at some point. And then the last thing is a misdemeanor assault charge in 2024, where he completed a rehab program. I don't think that's the one that would get him for the Ravens, but you always have to be concerned that they're going to eliminate somebody. I'm not concerned in Abdul Carter's case, because he's going to be gone long before the Ravens. Right. So
I was just saying, I don't think he'll be happy.
Yeah. That he's taken otherwise. Elite get off. The first step is very near the top of the class. He's routinely able to make the offensive tackles overcommit and then reverse off that. He's one of the really good guys to do that. Toolkit is not all the way polished. He's got more to learn there. By the way, that's a plus. You want a guy who's striking out a lot at a young age, that you can cut that strikeout rate, add balls in play, and you're going to add some more hits later on. That's definitely something I look at as being a positive in a young guy who's already playing at a very high level, very high motor. Great effort on the backside to run plays, on all plays, frankly. All the athleticism you might want out of a Sam. He's had some opportunity to do that, 62 in 2024. Of course, again, it doesn't matter. The Ravens aren't going to get him, but it's an interesting possibility that he would be a Sam linebacker. There's no package that would allow the Ravens to move up by Carter. I know there's a lot of people who are listening to this show who just says, make it happen, Ravens. And they you know, folks who generally don't understand like relative value in the draft. The Ravens traded every pick they had from 2024 to 25. They'd be able to move up between the 10th and 11th pick in this draft. And that's if some team was really willing to trade one pick for 7 or one pick for 11, sorry, in this case, which they're not. So, and if they traded all of next year's picks, they probably still don't have enough to get up to number two because there'd be a discount on next year's pick. And it just wouldn't make any sense. And if they traded Mark Andrews, if they threw him up, he's worth like that much additional thing. And they're always trying to figure out, oh, how can we do it with a player kind of thing too. He's out of the range of the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, if you want Travis Hunter, if you want Cam Ward, if you want Abdul Carter, it's not possible to get those guys for the Ravens. And I think most of the listeners, by the way, do understand that there's just a lot of guys on the Twitterverse that are Ravens fans who really don't get it with regard to cap expenditures is the big one, but also in terms of moving up and getting a player in the draft.
Arm length for Abdul Carter was 33 inches at his pro day. He didn't do anything. He didn't weigh in. He was 6'3" and 2/3, 250 pounds, 9 3/4 hand, 33 inch arms, 79 1/4 wingspan at his pro day. So those are going to be definitely on the low end for this position. Although it should be noted that a lot of when people look at like percentages where this falls for edge defenders, it's like the old data that had like Aaron Smith, it has all of these guys that were like, you know, were big, heavy ends that were often bigger in frame. And I don't know what their arm lengths all were, but those guys are kind of in that data pool a lot of times. So these days, this isn't totally unusual. 33 would be still on the smaller in terms of, but again, like I said, for Walker, I think when you win first contact, I'm less worried about it. Like, and playing on the edge, it's a lot different, I think, especially because you are in space. You do have one side open a lot of the time when you're playing on the edge. And so I think you couldn't use him inside the tackle a ton, but he's honestly so fast and so explosive. I think you're going to get to a point where you're going to move this guy all around the formation. Like, I really think that. I want him to develop an edge more before that happens. But if by year three, this guy isn't like the ultimate chess piece for your defense on long and late downs, and you aren't building the whole package off what you can do for him. And again, this to me is more of the like, could he be Micah Parsons conversation? My big question, I don't think he's as big and strong as Parsons is. I don't think he has the detonation on contact the way that Parsons does. And that will be the like missing ingredient. But I know it sort of seems lazy because it's 11 and it's Penn State and everything. But if you watch him like, and you know he has off ball experience like Parsons did, and he can blitz from off ball too, and you watch some of the reps where he does. I mean, it's hard not to be like, yeah, we could use this player, at least on like long and late downs, pass obvious situations, we could use him that way. So, I mean, the team at the top of this draft, he and Hunter are just, they're lucky because there's just not a lot of, you know, there could be other players on their level, but right now they all have question marks. From where we know stand right now, I just think those two guys are just the most special players in the draft.
All right. Now, let me hit you with a hypothetical here. And this is, we're fans of not the Cleveland Browns, both of us, Ravens fan and Steelers fan, respectively. If you're hoping for who the Cleveland Browns get in order for the Browns not to suddenly turn the franchise around, would you prefer they draft Shadur at number two or another quarterback, or maybe Jackson Dart at number two? Would you prefer they draft Hunter at number two, or would you prefer they draft Carter?
This is if I'm a fan of the Browns
you're hoping the Browns do poorly because you are hoping the Browns do poorly.
James Pierce, is that an option? Just kidding. No, I think it would be a quarterback just because of the variance that's involved in the position. I have just way more questions about Sanders and Darth. They could hit and it could obviously be devastating, but I think Hunter and Carter, I think, are awesome. And I have big questions about Sanders, big questions about Dart. And so I think I would just rather take the risk that they might be good, you know, than the certainty that I feel, at least, that Hunter or I think they're going to take Hunter, by the way. I feel pretty confident predicting that. And so I think he's a really good player, and, you know, and I think Carter's a really good player, and I think they're probably going to get one of the best guys in the draft, which isn't what they deserve given where they ended up, but oh well, whatever. So it's not always fair.
The other things that are going through this is that the Saints' injury to Derek Carr really changed the nature of the first round. Honestly, maybe changed the player the Ravens will get, because it'll mean one more draft pick potentially going to a quarterback, and it might be Jackson Dart going at number 9, I think, wherever the Saints pick. I think it's number 9. Might be him. Is he a guy that you would have liked for the Steelers at 21?
No, not really. I don't really feel that confident in any of the quarterbacks. I mean, I feel most confident in Ward, but given that he'll be off the board, I don't really feel confident enough in any of the rest of the guys. I don't think it's as bad as the Kenny Pickett draft. That draft was terrible. That pick was one of the worst I've seen at the time. I had a 4th-round grade on him. I just couldn't believe that pick. So Browns fans will, I guess he's with the Browns now, but I think that, I wouldn't feel super confident in the Steelers. If I'm the Steelers, I wouldn't be going quarterback in this draft. They probably will, by the way, just not because they necessarily love the class, but because they screwed themselves this offseason by one of the most clown off seasons we've ever seen, probably from a team, to be honest. And so they've put themselves in a really brutal situation now where they might have to take a quarterback, but I don't think it'll be because they or anybody else believes that a quarterback is actually worth selecting there at 21.
All right. How about we go into a couple honorable mentions here? And again, I've got limited time here, and I'm sure you do too. We're up deep into the night with this incredibly fun conversation. But give me a couple of honorable mention guys, or maybe name one, I'll name one, and then you name another kind of thing. Just one or two things you like about the guy, not a whole scouting report.
Yeah, at 11, I had Pierce, so we already talked about him. At 12, I had Josiah Stewart, and so he's probably the guy worth mentioning here first. Just speed-to-power conversion for a smaller player is really awesome. I think he plays extremely hard. He's not an unbelievable athlete in space. I think his recent 40 revealed that. I think that was kind of obvious on tape, but just how hard he plays, how explosive he's off the ball, the fact that he can convert to power, and I think he can win high side as a rusher too. He might just be a situational guy, Josh Uche type, maybe that kind of a player. Bryce Huff would be maybe a good comparison for him, but I think this kind of player is valuable in the NFL.
Okay, I'll go down with a lower round guy that I thought he's about number 17, 18, 19 on my list is Ashton Gelati of Louisville. Maybe a fourth round guy for the Ravens. Maybe he's still a guy who the Ravens would have to take at 91 to get him, but I'm hoping he's a little bit off brand because he's a pear-shaped guy. But I think if you're looking for, he's not a Sam option, but I think he could be a guy who could help against the run, but could be a very interesting, developable pass rusher.
A lot of junk in the trunk for Gelati. That guy, he's a thick boy for sure. No, I think he's a good one. Savion Jones from LSU is another player that I became really intrigued in late in the process. Think there's real burst off the ball for a guy who's listed 280. I think he's a true edge, though. I don't mess around with the, like, not that he could never rush inside or anything, but I think he's a true edge. I think he needs to cut some weight, but I think there's real twitch here, plays incredibly hard. I think he's very physical. He can actually win high side as a rusher, which is kind of crazy for a guy as big as him. I watched him at points and I was like, wait, are we sure this guy's not better than Shamar Stewart? And maybe he will be, I don't know. But I think that he's an intriguing player that I'd look at late in the end day two.
I'll give you one more guy, not at all for his pass rush skills, but Femi Oladejo is a guy who I think could be a Sam that the Ravens could use, particularly on early downs. If you're looking for a limited Sam that he's not really your pass rush specialist, I think he could be the guy. Again, it'd be wagering maybe a fourth round pick on a fairly athletic guy, a very raw pass rusher. He actually moved from inside linebacker to outside linebacker in what, about week three of this last season for UCLA, right?
Yeah, I think it was maybe even before the season they started cross training him, but he really jumped in it and like major reps early on. He's a pure effort, heart, hustle, physicality, run defender, you know, type of guy. But yeah, not much pass rush ability, but he's 16 for me. I would on my list. I really like the way that he plays. I'd be interested in developing him for sure.
All right, John, fantastic discussion. Appreciate all you bring to this and really going to get you on for another position next year, maybe edge again, but maybe someplace else where we hear different opinions about this. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me as always. Really fun to have these conversations. I love the in-depth discussions that you have in there. I think Ravens fans should be very grateful for this type of content. It's just not something I would kill for something like this as a Steelers fan, for example. Like, there's just not a lot of quality content like this out here. And so I do really appreciate you having me on, having me be a part of this. You can find my work over at Audibles and Analytics. That's my Substack, $5 a month to subscribe, or $50 for the year. I do Bucks and Steelers content on there. That is true, but I do NFL content year round. Ollie Connolly, who's a wonderful analyst, but one of the most insightful analysts out there of the game of football. He and I do NFL podcasts twice, at least twice a week, maybe three times a week, all throughout the regular season, talking NFL, but we talk every team in the league. And then in the offseason, we're talking tons of free agency, in-depth breakdowns of signings and players and fits and all that kind of stuff. And then tons of draft. We've gone through every single position group. We'll do linebackers right before the draft here. And we'll kind of do our final big boards next week as well and things like that. But we talk every position, every player really at the top of the draft, especially pretty much everybody that's drafting the first three or four rounds. I would say we cover pretty in depth, and some later guys too, but we talk through all of them. Our podcasts are lengthy, but then we go for about, we've talked about each position group, I would say probably for about 3 or 4 hours, and podcasts that you can find over on Audibles and Analytics as well. So lots of content over there. All my scouting reports on all the players we've talked about today are over there as well. So if people are interested, at Audibles and Analytics is the name of the Substack.
All right. Other folks out there, really appreciate your listening to this show through the whole draft process. Got great reactions to all these pods and appreciate all your loyalty listening to this. Hope you'll join us on draft night. John, what are you doing on draft night for the 3 days? Are you on a live stream somewhere?
The first day I'll be watching, you know, probably and probably writing some stuff for my site. We'll probably do a podcast, Ollie and I, that night after the first round. The second and third day is actually a work of my full-time job. So I'll be following along my full-time job. I work with high school. I'll be working with high school students that weekend, specifically in a leadership development weekend. So it'll be some classroom stuff, some sports and competition stuff that we'll be doing, that kind of fun stuff. So I'm looking forward to it, but I will be sad to be pulled away from a little bit of more of the draft stuff that I've been locked in every year. This is the first year I've ever had something overlap with it in a long time. So, but I'll have content still mixed in there too later in the evenings, or maybe the day after the draft, I'll have a big content on podcasts and written stuff too. So there'll be still stuff I'll be involved in.
All right. Hope folks will join us on draft night, 17 hours of coverage. We'll have a live stream the entire time. It's very interactive. You get a good chance to be involved in this. Tell us what your selections are. I want to thank John again for coming on. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Okay. I'm sorry.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.